Is anyone here from Representative Peterson's office? I guess not. Come on, Catherine, why don't you just pass out the amendment, and we'll go through the bill.
Go through the bill. I just passed the amendment out.
I know.
All right.
Or I'll go through the bill.
Okay, the bill enacts provisions concerning easements.
And paying for upkeeping, maintenance for easements, right?
Right, yes, Senator.
It has to do with maintenance of easements, talking about combination, if an owner refuses to maintain their easements.
Okay, I can...
Go through the...
Yeah, the measure specifically requires all owners of a right-of-way to share the cost of maintaining the right-of-way based on each owner's use of the easement. It also sets forth the provisions for determining how costs would be shared, and it applies prospectively. And I'm not sure if the amendment changes that or not.
It is very much more prospective. It's existing on or created after October 1, '89. I guess it goes back. It's existing. It's easements existing on October 1, '89. So it takes away the prospective part. The amendment would do that. If I read it. Eric Carlson, you want to come up, Eric? Is he here? Eric has gone away too. Let's set this bill aside then to another day. And turn to Jack. You're finished, right?
Yes, sir.
Well, we have members here. Let's do work session, House Bill 2294.
House Bill 2294 is at the request of the Department of State Police. There is one relatively minor amendment I'll pass out to you the next time.
This is the designated agency issue, if you recall. And we had testimony from BPST to say that they wanted to be added to the list of designated agencies that would have direct access to the LEDs. NCIC information, which included other states.
Actually, I think they want to become a law enforcement.
Right,
that's
yes.
Correct.
But that's right. That would allow them the direct access right. To the NCIC.
Move the amendment.
Senator Springer is moving House Bill 2294-1 amendments. Is there other objections? So ordered.
Move the bill as amended. Do pass.
Senator Springer moves House Bill 2294 to the floor with a due pass recommendation as amended. Discussion? Call the roll, please, Pat.
Senator Brenneman?
Aye.
Rockman?
Aye.
Brinsky?
Aye.
Hill? Shoemaker?
Aye.
Springer?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carried. Thank you. Let's move to 2357.
That is at request of various members of the legislature. This is the bill addressed to the requirement that an inmate stay in the county of, to use the term loosely, residence when he's out on temporary leave. As a result of our public hearing, there was one issue that I believe Senator Shoemaker raised, and I'll pass out an amendment that addresses that at this time. You may recall that the bill, as it reads now, would appear to require the Department of Corrections to waive the requirement if the inmate asks. So this amendment simply changes that language from shall to may.
And that has to do with moving out of state, if I recall correctly.
Right.
So
yeah.
Senator Springer.
Madam Chair, I think we first had our hearing on this the last week, earlier this week.
Right.
And I recall some of the discussion, but I'm not sure if we discussed specifically, maybe Senator Shoemaker or others can help me out. I happen to live in a jurisdiction, Multnomah County, which has, in terms of its population, we are finding that the number of serious crimes, as well as the number of commitments, prosecutions, exceeds what one would expect in terms of our crime rates in other counties based on population. I think unfortunately, the reason for that is that Portland, like a lot of metropolitan areas, it tends to be the focal point where crimes get done by people who may not actually be residents of that county. They may have committed their criminal activity, they may have robbed the bank in Portland, they may have done the drug deal in Portland, they may have done the prostitution. Unfortunately, cities are where these things happen, and I'm not sure that the way we've dealt with residents, you know, I appreciate the reason the bill's here. Obviously, Marion County has borne more than its share of folks on temp leave, but I got to kind of look out for the interests of my own county here, too, and I'm just not sure we've explored what the impact would be in the circumstances I've described.
Well, I suppose you don't go back to where you commit your crime. You'd have to go back to the resident, where you were a resident. So I guess that's a piece that's different.
Mm-hmm.
That would at least, if someone came from Salem and committed the crime in Portland, you'd still be sending them back to Salem, I think. Now, correct me, Jack, if I'm in error.
That's correct. That language on the Ann Gross version of the bill is starting on line 11. Residency means the last address of record as determined in descending order by the driver's license, records maintained by the Department of Revenue, records maintained by the State Police, records by the Department of Human Resources, and then only after those are exhausted do you get down to where the offense occurred.
So I think at least there's been an attempt made to resolve that particular issue, and the issue that said you have to go back to the county of residence was, and I don't know whether you missed part of the testimony or not, they alleged at least that they made it county because they didn't feel that they would want to send someone back to their exact neighborhood if it were contraindicated or whatever. So those are the two pieces that at least I recall from various testimony, and we were in and out that day, and it was a rushed testimony, admittedly.
Well, I think the definition that counsel has pointed out probably speaks, albeit indirectly, to my concern, although I'm not sure. I think we know that at any given time, I guess, is 10% of the licenses are in a suspended status, and even though you're required by law to notify the Motor Vehicles Division of a change in your address, I know there are just tens, if not hundreds of thousands of people who haven't notified DMV of their current address, but that's enough said on that subject, perhaps. I don't know if my concern has been fully addressed, but
I'm happy to take a little more time if you want to explore something. I saw this bill come in, and without the amendments that were made significant in the House, I was prepared to just not deal with it very positively, but I think they've made some efforts. Senator Grinsky.
Well, I agree. Look, the amendments are definitely better than the way this bill first showed up, but it seems to me that there's a certain artificialness, if that's the way to put it, to just saying let's send them back to where they came from. The person may have been in the prison for 5 years or something. A lot of things have changed in that amount of time, and now they're out on temporary leave, so we decide that it's best to send them back where they were residing at the time when they were arrested 5 years ago or 10 years ago or whatever. And I'm not sure that's necessarily conducive to them not committing more crimes. I'm not sure that it isn't either, but the there doesn't seem to be a whole lot of discretion unless you fall into these categories of having a biological family that resides somewhere else, or you have a full-time job, or, you know, if you don't fall into those categories, you're going back there. And it seems to me there could be a lot of other circumstances that might need to be considered. That's my only concern with it.
Well, I'm happy to hold the bill over a little longer if you all want to think you can sort it out more. It's just, I didn't want to hang around any longer unless we had some ideas that we thought we might want to work on. That's fine.
Madam Chair?
Senator Shoemaker?
If the sentencing guidelines become law, this bill won't have much effect, will it?
Well, they come out on post-conviction relief.
This is just temporary leave.
Well...
And it has to be in excess of 30 days, and I thought they're going to cut out that temp leave as a...
Well, okay, this is, we've got both of them. One applies to temporary leave, and the other one applies to parole.
Oh, I thought there was a parole.
Yeah, they're both here. They're 24-36 is the other one related to parole. So they are both companions, and they are actually the, in fact, they are, we need to ask staff to look these over, because as Senator, as Representative Mannix suggested, the language is different, and he thought the language was better in 2357.
I have an amendment drafted to make them track.
Okay, good.
Ask a question which might help me.
Sure, Senator Grinsky.
What happens now when these people are released on temporary leave? Are they free to go wherever they want, as long as they're in the state?
Someone here from the Corrections Division?
Jack, do you know?
I believe they are, Senator.
As long as they come back and stay in the state during their 30 days or whatever.
I believe so, although I'm not certain.
Okay.
Senator Springer?
Has anybody taken a tough look at the whether or not we're going to run into constitutional problems? You know, in terms of, I realize that a court can impose a lot of conditions. I don't know about what test is applied to a condition imposed as part of temporary leave as it relates to residency.
I think you need to ask the question for both temporary leave and the
parole.
release issue, whether you call it parole or post.
I think there's the courts kind of look at this residency issue and your ability to move across state lines. And I think there's a pretty high test when we try to tell somebody they can live or have to live somewhere. And I think we're just inviting a challenge, and I'm not sure we're on very good grounds.
Madam
Chair. Yes, Senator.
Chair, there was this recent Supreme Court case that just the other day that had to do with sentencing, I believe, that said that it said that the corrections officials had great latitude. I think it had to do with visitation, I believe, is what it had to do with, and determining who could come and visit. Who could visit an inmate, and I think that, but the language, at least in the story on the decision, gave corrections officials a great deal of latitude in allowing for those kinds of things. And there has been a steady trend with the courts of cutting back and back and back and back on inmates' rights. Now, whether you agree with it or not, that certainly has been the trend. And so I would at least say that.
Why don't you come up, please? And I don't want to take a lot more time at it, but come on up, introduce yourself, and if you have...
Yes, for the record, my name is Mark Wiener, and I am the legislative assistant to Representative Mannix. Just on the point that Senator Springer brought up, there was a considerable amount of discussion on the constitutional issues with regard to determining where... or limiting where a released person may or may not reside. And pursuant to the discussions in the House, it was decided that there's a clear constitutional differential between someone who is in a parole or temporary release situation, in which case they are under the charge of the Department of Corrections, and if they are between that and they're being in a probationary situation, in which case they're under the charge of the courts. And from all the research that was done by counsel on the House side, it was determined that once you are in the charge of the Department of Corrections, as in the case in a parole or a temporary release situation, there is no real substantial constitutional issue of whether or not you may say you may live here or you may not live here. And that is actually why there was a clear decision not to include probation as a condition in either of these bills, because apparently that is where the constitutional line is drawn. But there was a substantial amount of discussion on that.
Mr. Springer.
Well, follow up, and I don't want to take a whole huge amount of committee's time. I'm kind of lukewarm on this bill, as probably can be guessed, but as part of that legal discussion or research, I mean, wouldn't it be necessary to articulate some rational basis for treating these folks differently than anybody else? I mean, what is the reason that we tell a court that we need this bill? Why is this good public policy? Why do the people of the state of Oregon need this when we, as opposed to telling somebody who may be on parole or on temp leave, your right, which most citizens have, to choose your own residence is restricted?
At this stage of the questioning, I would probably feel more comfortable in having Representative Mannix or some competent counsel respond to that. And he is available for the purposes of today's hearing, because he's just across the way, or for a future hearing if you'd like to set this over. As I said, there was substantial discussion, part of which I was present for and part of which was just summarized to me.
Well, we'll get our counsel to kind of be in touch and check it out and see if we can collect those pieces efficiently from
Liz Zucker has done that research, and maybe it's just a matter of reviewing the case or two, but it's a considerable question in my mind exists as to whether or not we can survive a challenge.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Shoemaker.
I wonder if it might not be desirable to give the district attorney or superintendent a little more leeway to waive this requirement than the bill gives. And in that respect, I would suggest two amendments. One, that under A, where it says inmate provides proof of a full-time job, that we eliminate the words full-time, so that if an inmate has any kind of a job, he can go where the job is. And, you know, more power to it. And then there ought to be a final clause which would, in rather general terms, allow other, you know, the superintendent to grant a waiver in other appropriate circumstances or something to that effect. So that
good cause shown or something.
Yeah. So I would move those. First specific amendment and second conceptual amendment, trusting that Jack in the appropriate language.
Do you have any further discussion of Senator Shoemaker's conceptual comment?
I think it's a good idea.
Okay. No objections. We'll get Jack to work on that and be in touch with other parties and Senator Hill. You going to object?
No.
Okay. And we're doing one of the shells to May someplace around here. We have that ready. Okay, let's set House Bill 2357 and 2436 aside, assuming that whatever we do on one will also apply to the other, and we're agreed to use 57 as the model bill language. Okay, then let's take up 3099, and then we'll move to the public hearing on the rest of the bills. 3099, 3099 in work session, please.
House Bill 3099 in growth is the bill at the request of various members of the legislature. It has to do with classes of sexual offenses and has the effect of raising the classification of the crime in those instances where a person is convicted of rape, sodomy, or sexual penetration with a foreign object, and the victim is incapable of consent by reason of mental defect, mental incapacitation, or physical hopelessness.
And I gather we have no
amendments.
No amendments on this. Pleasure of the committee.
I have a...
Senator Shoemaker?
Question. One could imagine a situation where a man and a woman are living together, either married or unmarried, and the woman is permanently suffering from a mental defect that really makes her incapable of consenting to the sexual act one way or the other. And you wouldn't want to put the husband or companion in those circumstances to be in a position of committing a rape every time he has a sexual relationship with his wife.
Well, that's probably on one end of the spectrum.
That's the kind of stuff that law school essays examine. I'm not sure it's something we need to be concerned about.
Well, what do you do?
Well, in this state, you can rape your wife, can't you?
Pardon?
So in this state, you can rape your wife?
I know you can, and I think that's an appropriate law. Well, that
can you marry? This is probably a stupid question, but can people with these kinds of problems get married that would qualify as physical helplessness?
Well, that's a contract. You can't enter into a contract if you're in that condition, can you? And marriage is a contract.
But you can certainly enter into a relationship.
Yeah.
And it's probably society is the better for it. Somebody caring for somebody, essentially. It's probably... they wouldn't be prosecuted, I suppose, but it is seem a shame to make what they're doing a crime.
Well, it is now. I mean, we're just... it already is, and I guess we have to... I'm not aware of any case that's ever been filed by a district attorney's office or a true bill on a grand jury in these circumstances.
Well, I'm not, of course not.
There's a mens rea requirement here. I think, I mean, you gotta show some type of malintent on the part of the... I don't know how we get to that.
You ready to move the bill, Senator?
Well, we'll take a chance, Madam Chair. House Bill 3099 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Further discussion? Call the roll, Pat.
Senator Bachman. Senator Bachman.
Aye.
Senator Bransky.
Aye.
Senator Bill.
Aye.
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 Chair Collins.
Aye. Motion carried. Thank you very much.
I raise a question doesn't mean I know the answer.
Okay, now we're going to get down to real business here. Let's start. Call Senator Phillips. Where's Senator Mason? Where's Mason? It would be my preference to start with 2369 and 3015, I guess, Sarah. We've got people here. Why don't we just go ahead and get Senator Phillips on the way, but those of you who are here to come, we've got 2369, Doug Hockelrod is here, Rosanna Creighton is here, and why don't you come on up and we'll get Phillips and he'll come in and you can start without him.
Madam Chair and committee members, my name is Rosanna Creighton, Executive Director of Citizens for a Drug-Free Oregon. House Bill 2369 is identical to Senate Bill 456, a bill that was introduced at our request by Senator Paul Phillips and Representative Mike Burton, with 15 Senate co-sponsors and 38 House co-sponsors. We support legislation establishing a safety zone around our schools. We support House Bill 2369 and its sponsors. The fact that Oregon has become well known as a haven for drug manufacturers and dealers is readily recognized. Arresting this problem requires a comprehensive approach that treats both the supply side and demand side. Education of our youth and having parents set the example are the best weapons that we can use. Beyond this, enforcement against drug dealing is a powerful weapon. The first place we must create a safety zone from drug activity is around our schools. All elementary, junior high, high schools, including public, private, and parochial schools. Prevention and education will not protect our children from the destructive forces of illicit drugs unless we provide an environment that promotes the non-use of drugs and shields them from those who make money peddling drugs. I can't imagine a person in this room today that would say that we should not have a safety zone around our schools. Would there be anyone here who thinks our children should not be free to walk to school, be in school, play on the school grounds, and walk the halls of their school completely safe from being exposed to drug use, drug distribution, drug manufacturing, and trafficking? House Bill 2369 is the first step in showing that we will stand firm to protect our children. It is modeled after a federal statute. It is constitutional and is supported by educators and citizens alike. Oregon young people are vulnerable to the drug activities. Where there is a general downward trend in recent years in drug use by high school seniors nationally, Oregon students are not following that trend. Our students use illicit drugs earlier and more frequently than students do nationally. In just the past 2 years, daily use of marijuana by our eighth graders has increased 80%, and daily use of cocaine by our eighth graders has increased fourfold. We must increase our efforts and develop an intolerance to this problem. Oregon must send the message across the country that drug manufacturing, dealing, and use will not be tolerated any longer, especially within the safety zone of our schools. We must hang tough and be tough. The future of Oregon is at stake. House Bill 2369 is basic and necessary to the safety and well-being of our children. I urge this committee to quickly take action and pass House Bill 2369. I am here and I will stay during the testimony for questions. Perhaps you would like to ask them of me now or after our fine district attorney from Lane County testifies.
A pleasure.
I have some questions, but they probably could wait until we
go
have
ahead.
Both. Vice Chairperson Hill and members of the committee, I'm Doug Harkleroad, Lane County's district attorney and this year's president of the Oregon District Attorneys Association. You've all heard from Senator Hill and from myself in the past about the problems of drugs in our communities today. You've just heard more. I shan't go into that again. The DA's Association strongly supports House Bill 2369 and urges you to pass it. I'm available for questions.
Senator Sherman.
Yeah, thanks. It says except as authorized by, and then the references are to many sections of Chapter 475. Could you just kind of tell us some of the authorized situations where you can deliver a controlled substance?
Those might, without going back and looking at those, my memory of that is that those are prescription type things where delivery is okay to give you substances. Cocaine used by a doctor is just fine.
Okay, I see.
Administered.
Yeah. Thank you. Better term.
Yeah. And what exactly is a controlled substance?
Controlled substance is a long list of chemicals that the Board of Pharmacy puts out. It's schedules 1, 2, 3, and 4, basically, and things can be added to that list or subtracted from that list. Very long list.
Is it, in addition to the drugs that we commonly think of and know as heroin, cocaine, and those, It would include a number of drugs that are normally used as prescription drugs, but which can be abused, I would assume.
Yes. Yeah, I can't think of one right now, but I'm confident there are a number of drugs that are on that list that are prescription.
So we'd be getting at all of those, too, regardless of how damaging they really are, I suppose. I mean, the controlled substance list are, I guess, they're chemical substances that are not supposed to be passed from person to person without a prescription.
Yeah, Valium is an example.
Yeah.
Came to me there as you were talking. That's a controlled substance.
Is marijuana a controlled substance?
Yes.
Is one, less than 1 ounce of marijuana a controlled substance?
Yes.
So this would make it a Class A felony to give somebody a...
A joint.
A joint, which is now considered...
A violation.
A violation, a civil violation, and that must occur frequently within 1,000 feet of certainly universities and adult schools. I wonder if it's really, is it intended by this bill to get at that, to passing a joint to somebody within the vicinity of a university?
I should draw the committee's attention to the House of